Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County, ladies and gentlemen, you know, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the two-time award-winning Politically Direct. And I am, of course, the Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, I want to thank you all for tuning in here on the 5th of November, the year 2020. What a year it's been so far, folks. I know we're all exhausted for multiple reasons, but regardless, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen, and it's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic, do me a favor, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. And of course, you can follow my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, a little pop culture, pro wrestling, political humor, motivational quotes, whatever. I know you enjoy them. And of course, that's why my, you know, the amount of likes and followers grows each and every day on Instagram. So I appreciate you checking me out whenever you can. And also hip on Twitter, folks, at Professor F. Uribe. And certainly for all you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct and like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Folks, no one does it better than Insider NJ. It starts at the very top with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, an exceptional columnist. Not really a fan of his political views, but I mean, I know he's not a fan of mine, so I kind of, you know, cancel each other out in a sense. But certainly great columns. You definitely want to check him out, as well as Jay Lassiter, along with Fred Snowflack, and even Alan Steinberg, who oftentimes is a little delusional But love Al, you know, a good guy, you know, just is a, you know, just doesn't have it all together politically, as they say, but good guy nonetheless. He definitely wants to check out his columns when possible. And of course, only the great contributors on Insider. And Jay, once you click on the website, folks, upper right hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Do me a favor, click on it, and you'll see that you'll be automatically enrolled once you click subscribe in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you're doing, I don't know, maybe you're doing a quick workout in the morning, maybe walking your dog, maybe you're having cereal in the mornings, whatever, watching this around the clock speculation about vote counts and everything else, I'm sure you're on your smartphone or on your Mac or a PC or a tablet, whatever. Guess what? When you do that, I'm sure you're checking your email, and sure enough, in there for you will be the morning intelligence briefing, courtesy of Insider NJ. So definitely check it out there, folks. Don't forget Insider NJ on Facebook, and of course, follow it on Twitter. Tons of great material each and every day there. Again, the best journalism, I would argue, next to my own, every day, as they say, covering what's going on in the political scene in New Jersey. No one does it better, folks, than Insider NJ. Again, once again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, or our sponsors. Yes, folks, it is election day has come and gone. It is, to say the very least, has been an exhausting week for a lot of people in New Jersey. It's a jubilant few days, and for some of us, not so jubilant. But as we all expected, maybe some of these vote totals were going to take some days, if not maybe weeks, the way it's looking. Let's see what happens. Obviously, we know here in New Jersey, the junior U.S. Senator Cory Booker easily reelected to his Senate seat for another term of 6 years. No real surprises in the congressional races in North Jersey, but you did see some surprises in the South. There was a big onslaught by Amy Kennedy down in South Jersey. I think what we've seen is that the Kennedy name no longer carries that political capital that it once did decades ago. And Jeff Van Drew, the new Republican, decided to, again, as he had been Democrat for some time, decided to change his affiliation to Republican, ran as a Republican this time in South Jersey. And from all estimations, it seems like he won re-election. So he'll continue in the House of Representatives as well as Chris Smith in that district, and certainly some disappointing losses for David Richter, in addition to State Senate Minority Leader Tom Kaine Jr., in his bid to go to the House of Representatives, being defeated by the incumbent Tom Malinowski in a very close race, I thought, kind of back and forth there. And certainly no surprise, Mikey Sherrill winning re-election in her district, certainly Albie Osiris up here by me in Hudson County, no surprise there. You know, disappointed to see Billy Primp not overtake Bill Pascrell, who seems like the poster child for a career politician up there in the Essex County area, Essex, Passaic County area. But certainly a good showing for Billy, nonetheless. And, you know, I'm sure it won't be the last time we hear from Billy Primp in that district. But again, folks, a lot to uncover here in New Jersey, and certainly a guy who I trust to do that every single week when I invite him. And he's just who I call Dean of Hudson County Journalism. And I would argue he's on the Mount Rushmore of journalism here in the state of New Jersey. He is the distinguished columnist for Tap Into out of Bayonne here up here in Hudson County. He's my good friend, fellow journalist, Al Sullivan, joining me here today on Politically Direct. Al, what's going
Hello.
On?
Hello.
How are you, man?
I am doing all right. You know, well, considering we're in the middle of madness.
Yes, to say the very least. And Al, we'll get to the madness of Election Day on a national level in a few minutes. But I want to keep you here in Jersey for a little bit. No surprise, Al, looking at the turnout when it came to the marijuana question here in New Jersey. Ballot question one passed by a margin of 67 to 53. it was called rather early in the evening, which I think, you know, I think we can both say that things being called too early in the evening don't sit well with us. But it seemed like here in New Jersey, the marijuana ballot question passed overwhelmingly. And as I told my students online, you know, when I have class later, and I, as a matter of fact, yesterday, I said to them, hey, listen, don't get any bright ideas. Don't go thinking go smoke marijuana on the street now or go smoke it on your porch or whatever. There are still laws to be dissected here in New Jersey. And Al, that's my concern. My concern is someone who has worked in criminal justice for 10 years before entering academia and journalism. I just, you know, the way alcohol and tobacco are taxed here, I'm just afraid the legislature is going to mess this up too. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, the Attorney General put out a notice today that to remind people that marijuana is still illegal until it actually goes through the process. So it's you know, people, but it's going to be really hard to enforce. because if when you go to a court, these people go to court, they're going to make that argument, and it's going to be a legitimate argument. Well, you know, but I'm not a fan of legalized marijuana. So, I decriminalized I want, but I legalized. It's just another alcohol, and don't we have enough problems with alcohol?
You know what, Al? That's a great observation. And let me just put this out there because I've always been very transparent with my audience. I know you are also when you come on here and other media programs. But listen, I'm not as invested in this as other people. I've never smoked it. I don't care to. I don't have any interest. I mean, for me, you know, on a Friday night when I'm home, if I'm, you know, if I bring a girl over for Fernando and chill, right, that sort of slang term, I'm having a glass of wine, Al. I'm having a glass of wine. That's what works for me. Again, I'm not imposing my beliefs on anybody, but by the same token, the idea that we continue to keep incarcerating people, and black and brown people specifically, at these alarming rates, I think this law was, I think, overdue. But I'm also concerned, Al, about a quality of life perspective because, I mean, pre-COVID, I hated going to the Port Authority because you walk around there and you walk around outside, it stinks to marijuana. It stinks of other things. I don't know if that's something I kind of want out there in the public. Like, smoke it in your house, smoke it on your porch. But, Al, we live near each other. I really don't want to walk down Bergenline Avenue and have it reeking of marijuana. That's just me. I don't know. How do you feel?
Well, I mean, it's out there. I mean, you would be surprised how widespread marijuana use is already.
Sure.
The problem right now with marijuana is it's unpredictable. The quality, you don't know what you're getting because there's no regulations. And legalizing it will create standards that will allow people to control what they intake, very much like wine. I mean, when you go in a liquor store and you buy hard alcohol as opposed to wine, you know what you're getting. Right now, that's where marijuana is going to go, and if it's gauged by other states, and that's a good thing because, you know, some stuff is laced right now.
Sure,
But it's out there. I mean, it's just that now what you sit with by saying, okay, we've legalized it, it creates a normality that you may. I mean, look. We worry about secondhand smoke, cigarettes, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, you can get high by being around people who are smoking pot, and you don't want to get high because it's in the air around you. Two, the other problem with it is that it is, regardless of whether it's legal or not, it's a gateway drug, okay? It's like cigarettes. Cigarettes are a gateway drug. I mean, so you are opening a door to a high that people may not be completely satisfied with. Fortunately, if you legalize it, it won't be sold by the same people who are selling heroin and other drugs.
Yeah.
But people still get addicted to pot. You know, there's not this perception that this is a safe drug. It's not. I know people whose lives live, they're completely wrapped up in pot. They, you know, and their entire lives. There are health risks that are coming out from studies out in California and Colorado that show that there's a heart attack risk from repeated and constant use of pot. It's not a safe drug, but it's legal. It's going to be legal. And somehow the whatever regulations are in place have to protect people too. So we're going to have some sort of equally informative information centers that say what the risks are. I mean, because if everybody's acting like this is a riskless drug, and it's not.
Al, you're absolutely right. And one of the things you just nailed on the head right now is the idea of, you know, looking at it from a safety perspective. And also, yes, it's for 21 and over. But as we all know, Al, let's be honest, when we were younger, the idea of getting cigarettes, getting alcohol, was rather easy if you were underage. And,
yep.
You know, I think we can make the case that it's going to present the same problems. And listen, also, I also want to let my audience in on something, too. Part of my, I wouldn't say fixation on this issue, but my dedication to it is, again, having worked in the criminal justice system, you know, having worked in the judiciary, having worked for the public defender. I mean, Al, I went to jails in both Hudson and Essex counties daily to meet with defendants, to meet with clients, and I saw firsthand how harmful these drug laws were. Okay, and again, and on a local level, I applaud State Senator Sandra Cunningham here in Hudson County, down in the 31st Legislative District, as well as Ron Rice down in Essex County. And listen, they've been big, big, staunch advocates about, hey, let's get decriminalization right. Let's make sure we stop incarcerating Black and brown people because it's exhausting resources, space, and time. Where, let's be honest, Al, I don't have – listen, I might – my doctorate's not in medicine, but I'm an academic, and it doesn't, you know, I know for a fact that when it comes to looking at violent crime in New Jersey, there's no correlation with marijuana usage. So allocate our resources out on a law enforcement level to serious offenders, because guess what? People aren't carjacking others. People aren't committing robberies and burglaries and assaults because they're experimenting with marijuana. They're experimenting with harder drugs. Focus on that and stop penalizing poor people, basically, by putting them in jail because of marijuana. That's been my biggest pet peeve.
Well, I agree. I mean, that's, the fact is, you know, people have been, you know, under stricter laws, and you know, the Rockefeller laws were the most odious, in which, you know, you could go to jail for a long time for just having a joint. That's a marijuana cigarette. The fact is that's an unrealistic and unfair sentence for what is basically a minor crime. It's one thing to be selling it, and it's another thing to be using it, and the punishment should be different. Problem is sometimes the same person who is caught smoking is also selling, and that's where the distinctions come in for the legal system. The other problem with pot, and this is something that's being found out in places like Colorado, is how do you know at what point someone is inebriated beyond the inability to operate a car or a machine? With alcohol, there's a blood level, an oxygen level, you can take a breathalyzer and you can detect it. It's a lot more difficult to determine. The level of THC is in the blood. You're going to have to find some sort of measurement that deals with that too in order to enforce impairment issues. There are a lot of serious issues that I'm not sure about, you know. Also, Rice and had come to Jersey City at one point during the hearings for this, and he was clearly concerned about the social impact and the community in, you know, places like Jersey City and Newark, where, you know, some ways, you know, you're pouring gasoline on a fire, because this is going to make pot much more available to a minority population, and it is very much the way there's sort of an environmental racism. Well, this is sort of racist too, in the sense that, you know, you're making this available. It's like selling alcohol to the American Indians in back in the West. You knew the impact was going to be very negative.
Well, Al, you know what? And that's true. And I think that you just brought up a great point as well about impaired driving. And I think that's been one of the biggest talking points for opponents of this, where whether it's in Colorado or in general in other states, and again, New Jersey just became the 12th state in the country via this ballot measure to legalize it. There still isn't a sufficient amount of data out there to tell us conclusively how big of a problem impaired driving is. And let's be honest, there isn't a mechanism right now. Yeah, we can calibrate a machine to measure your blood alcohol level, but there's no machine right now. I mean, believe me, in the private sector, capitalism, the free market, someone will come up with it and they'll make a fortune, because they can certainly sell it to municipalities and state governments, and I'm not sure they'll buy them by the truckload. It just seems like that uncertainty also, I think, has made people very nervous.
Well, marijuana, the active ingredient is THC. And the problem mm-hmm. with it is it reacts differently in the way you ingest it. If you smoke it, it's one kind of reaction. But if you eat it, you know, like candies or cookies, it has a whole different and much more powerful and long-lasting effect. And so that's something that needs to be figured out, how you measure that. Because if you, you know, the old concept of marijuana brownies in the past, they were almost as powerful as LSD or psilocybin. They were hallucinogenic. And so when you take it into your body, it goes into the fat in your body and it remains there and it reacts differently. When you take it in your lungs, it goes in your blood and goes into your brain. And the effects dissipate faster. So, I mean, there's a lot of science here that hasn't quite been figured out. But ultimately, you know, some part of the government wants those tax revenues. I mean, Jersey City is now saying, well, you know, the mayor and two of the council people have already said tax revenue from this should go to the schools. Well, it's a good idea. I mean, but that's what the real motivation for a lot of public officials. And it really isn't social justice. It's taxes revenue that's going to go through the roof.
Well, Al, it's interesting you bring that up, because when it comes to you know, thinking about tax revenues, and you just mentioned that, and that's something I really wanted to pick your brain on, because we all know that it's something that really doesn't sit well with people, because now they have to think about how is this going to be regulated. And as we all know, Al, you know me, on this program and on my other media platforms, I don't trust Trenton to run a hot dog stand, okay? And guess what? They have not shown me anything whatsoever when it comes to, you know, being responsible, when it comes to a new revenue source. Again, Governor Murphy was jubilant on Tuesday night, saying, oh, my God, this is a great step in the right direction for social and economic justice. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, what economic justice? There's no such thing in New Jersey, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Al.
Well, here's the problem. And, you know, the fact is that there's a track record that you can follow with these initiatives, from the lottery, casinos, and online sports. These were all designed to provide revenue for specific purposes. And in every case, they got diverted to other places when needs came. I mean, some of the lottery still goes to senior citizen program, but it gets diverted through the budget. So it's not like, you know, what they do is they offset it. They say, well, we're going to put this to the seniors, and then the money goes into the general fund. Okay, that's the case with every one of these schemes, is that the money is supposed to be earmarked specifically for specific uses, and eventually it winds up, because New Jersey always being broke and always not able to meet their budget, they divert the money into the general fund to balance everything. And then they allocate money out of the general fund. But then they can cut that. It's not direct contact. So I don't even see that being done here. I don't know. I guess they haven't quite figured it out. Now they have to figure out how they're actually going to tax it and where the tax money is supposed to be going. But it was never sold the way it was with the lottery. I mean, William Musto and, you know, his was the grandfather of the lottery and the casinos had specifically wanted this locked in to help seniors in schools. This is not the case with marijuana. Right now, it's anybody's guess where it goes.
You're right about that. It is anybody's guess. And, you know, part of the – if you remember back in the summer of 2017 into the fall, you know, then-candidate Phil Murphy was adamant that, hey, if we legalize marijuana, we're going to help close the gap in terms of funding and a lot of these poor school districts that need funding. And guess what? Without raising taxes, this new revenue stream can help bridge the gap. And I'll tell you again – It's one of those things where, you know, you can bring a new revenue stream into New Jersey, but the legislature, and I don't want to blame Governor Murphy too much per se, because it's a problem that precedes him. So it doesn't all fall on Phil Murphy, but it falls more on the legislature where, yeah, guess what? More money comes in. We're just going to keep spending more of it. And instead of being judicious, they're being just fluid. And I'm just horrified that there isn't more outrage about it. But then again, it's New Jersey, Al, right?
Well, yeah. The problem with Murphy, all right, he's going to focus on poor schools, but this is also the man, and this is also the legislature, who just redirected all of the aid for the poor school districts. And so, you're saying one thing here, we're going to use this money to help the poor districts, but at the same time, you've just signed a death warrant for a lot of school districts who Jersey City is this between COVID and the state cuts is $300 million short next year. I mean, so is that what he's meant by pot solving the problem? I mean, if you're not funding the schools now, what's the guarantee that you're going to use this money to fund the schools later when you aren't doing it now?
Well, Al, absolutely right. And I think that also brings into question the idea about the impact that COVID's had on New Jersey. And I really want to get your thoughts on this, because you've always been right on the money on it. It's interesting, some of the measures that have been taken during COVID to protect New Jerseyans, right? We've seen the governor put a moratorium on evictions. We've seen the governor take other executive orders and actions to protect New Jerseyans. But by the same token, there's a justification or rationale to raise the tolls on the parkway, the turnpike, and the Atlantic City Expressway, and to raise the gas tax. So, okay, great. People aren't getting evicted, Al, but you're still making it more expensive for people to live here and to get to work. It just seems like another example of how tone-deaf Trenton is.
Well, Murphy is redistributing wealth through those. Okay, he may be helping poor people, but he's imposing it on working people. And that's a classic model for trouble, because eventually you're going to have a rebellion when people realize that they're all of the fees, and it's not just the tolls, the sales tax is going to change. Even though they're not talking about it yet, it's inevitable. The state is broke. And there's only a few revenue streams. And if marijuana does not pan out the way they think it's going to, then you're going to see them going to more traditional, the increase in alcohol tax, cigarette tax again, gasoline tax, because these are what they have. They need the money. I mean, the state is broke. And And if marijuana doesn't pan out, I mean, right now it's being sold as the great cure-all, but it can't cure everything.
That's right. No, you're absolutely right. It can't cure everything. And once again, it's basic economics 101. If you don't make a, if you don't have a product that you're putting out there for consumption, and it's not competitive from a price-wise perspective, guess what? You're enabling the black market to continue to thrive. Now, I get it that people might say, well, it'll be safer because it'll be regulated. We don't, we're not going to have to worry about contaminants or anything else. But, Al, at the end of the day, poor people in New Jersey that rely on marijuana for whatever reason are going to look at it and say, wait a minute, this is getting, this is not a reasonable price for this product. And look at the tax on it. I might as well just continue with my black market connection. And Al, that's, I think that's going to be a really pervasive problem for Trenton to overcome.
Well, there's, you know, look, the, by legalizing it, they're putting a lot of people out of business. You know, this, the black market exists. And they, it's usually the people who are minorities in the black market, and they're gonna, they're not going to be able to afford the, I mean, the cost of a startup is going to be phenomenal for pot industry. The people who are dealing it now are going to be either, they're going to have to continue in the black market, but they're being priced, they, you know, if even if it's reasonable, it's going to drive, there's going to be an intense backlash on what, you know, you consider a cottage industry. I wish they, you know, they could deal with it. There's a group in California, they came to Jersey City to testify, which specifically tries to enable people who are former drug dealers, former pot dealers, and people in the minority community and in poor community to be able to benefit. So they started a consortium to maybe include these people. That's, you know, maybe that's how you do it here. I mean, to avoid it from these people being thrown out of the industry. I don't know.
Listen, it's definitely something to keep an eye on for, because I, as I said, I don't trust Trenton Al as far as I can throw him to run anything. And what's really, really sad is a lot of these legislators, if they ran their homes the way they run the state, I think they'd all be homeless. I think they'd have credit card debt up the wazoo. I think that's what's really, really, I think, disheartening about this entire scenario is they seem to be tone deaf when it comes to being fiscally responsible. And that's, again, I think this is a problem that's been going on in Trenton for decades now, not just, you know, presently with Phil Murphy and the majority of Democrats, very progressive Democrats, right now in the legislature. Now, let me ask you this, because I know that we live in Union City, and obviously our mayor is also our state senator. And I think Brian Stack represents one of those Democrats in the legislature where, let's be honest, they weren't big fans of legalization. They're concerned about quality of life. I think living where we live, we know that one of the biggest things on Mayor and Senator Stack's agenda is keeping the city of Union City and the 33rd Legislative District clean, keeping it orderly, and keeping it, let's be honest, you know, drug-free. And, you know, I've had conversations with the mayor and state senator, and, you know, he understands the will of the people. He understands his colleagues in the legislature. But, if, you know, if it's up to Brian, he doesn't want to have this problem being pervasive throughout his city. And you know what, Al? I think a lot of center Democrats, center left, maybe moderate Democrats feel the same way.
Well, I mean, at this point, one of the problems here is nobody really explained at this how this is going to operate. All they did was they basically did an end run around the legislature because everything was blocked there. But the structure of this is still not, I have not seen anything to say how this is going to work. I've seen on a local level, like Jersey City, what they did is they banned, they did a zoning thing to ban all of these stores, and which would allow them to escape a mandate from the state when it becomes legal in the state, so that they could control where these places go. So they would be a sort of a spot zoning for each of the institutions. The problem is I haven't seen any kind of plan, and I'm sure there has to be something out there, but it wasn't presented with the referendum. All that's happened now is the public has said, yeah, we want marijuana legal, but how is it going to work? Who regulates it? How do you decide where they go? Is it going to follow the model of medical marijuana, which it itself is confusing? How these places are picked, how they get approvals. All of that's still a mystery. I guess they're going to model it after the medical marijuana, but that's no one's really said so yet.
You know what, Al? That's interesting. And that also brings into another question about what discrepancies, what differences are we going to see between the current medicinal marijuana laws and obviously this legalization route, which, as we all know, is going to be something that I think is worth keeping an eye on for, obviously in 2021. Al, let me ask you this, because I know that you oftentimes have been very critical of the governor, and rightfully so, with some of the measures he's taken. This past week, he did sign into law a ban on plastic bags and other items. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, I like to be as environmentally responsible as anybody. But, Al, you know what? If we're trying to make New Jersey the California of the East, I'm sorry. Have you looked at California lately?
Yep. I haven't been there, but I've seen enough pictures. The problem with the plastic bag ban, okay, isn't the idea. I mean, we have a serious problem with plastic in the oceans, sea turtles and all the rest. But the problem is it's being put on the backs of the consumer. In other words, if you want to ban this, you have to deal with the companies who supply the bags. And the retailers. The retailers don't want to have to bear the cost of it. So they're dumping it on, in other words, it's another hidden tax, sort of. And it's the consumer who has to bear it. In other words, just ban the banks. I mean, or force the company, the manufacturers to not ship to Jersey. If you're going to do it right. But the fact is they don't want to take on the big guys. The big guys got lawyers. So these bags are not going away. They're just not being distributed. And, they're going to make thicker bags, and you're going to get charged for them. In other words, that's the problem here is if you want to carry your own bags, it's social control. In other words, they're saying, bring your cloth bags or your plastic bags, but if you want to buy a bag, it's going to cost you. If you want a bag at a store, you're going to still be able to get it. You're just going to have to pay for it. And the other thing is, it does not cover all of the other plastic that is as horrible to the environment. It doesn't cover any of the stuff that you put your vegetables in. It doesn't cover this fact that anything that's a fresh food or meat or fish. It doesn't cover plastic that makes all of the other kinds of boxes and stuff. I don't know if you go to the ShopRite on Kennedy Boulevard, but when you go to the meat department, people are putting the meat that's already in plastic in additional plastic bags. Those are not covered. The only thing that's being banned and you're going to be charged for is what you carry the stuff out of the store with. It is not really covering the problem, because the plastic that's in the water comes from packaging. It isn't just these plastic bags that you have at the checkout counter. It's all the plastic that exists in all of that supermarket. You go around the supermarket and look at all the plastic that's there, all of that's going into the ocean. That's the stuff that most people throw out. And that's why it's so really, it's all symbolic. It really is not going to do anything.
Al, you nail it on the head as always. And I'm in full agreement with you. It just seems like overreaching and being kind of smothering from Trenton. I mean, that's the way this looks, Al. Am I wrong?
Well, no, it's the environmental movement. It's a new Green Deal. It's part of the it is part of the ideology or the religious aspect. This is one of their platforms. So you can't blame the governor if he's going to be in the green movement. This is something that he's being pressed on. Every town is. Jersey City got pressed on it. Sea Caucus was one of the early people because one of the mayor's aides was very green. And, you know, the problem is they also banned styrofoam. But if you go to a local coffee shop in Bayonne, I mean in Sea Caucus, you can still buy coffee in styrofoam. So it isn't even being enforced. So it's curious. But you can't blame the governor. He's following the green path.
No, I hear you. I mean, again, I know it's part of his progressive platform. I know he's appeasing a lot of the left in New Jersey, and I get that. I mean, the left, sink or swim, hell or high water, are a very loud bunch. They're very obnoxious bunch. Yeah, they're a very obnoxious bunch as far as I'm concerned, and I'm someone who – I'm one of the few people at Insider NJ who actually calls out the left, because not too many people here will, but I will. And it's just something that seems to be exhausting most of the time, whether it's about what they claim is environmental justice or this or that. It just – it seems like it's laborious to listen to, Al, and at times – it's not going to become expensive for us. And I think that's where a lot of people on the left, their field projects and this, you know, ivory tower mentality don't realize that. Yeah, everything, these feel good projects, Al, are wonderful. They're peachy. You know, you get to sit around, have a mimosa and talk with, you know, and again, I'm not trying to racialize this, but Al, is there anything worse in New Jersey's political culture than a bunch of like white woke progressives sitting around having a glass of wine, being all virtuous, and in the meantime, they just don't understand math? It's aggravating for me, Al.
Well, there's a great line, and it isn't mine. It's Jermaine Robinson. He's the council person for Ward F in Jersey City, and some of the woke people were coming, you know, talking about, you know, cleaning up Ocean Avenue and the environmental problems, and he says, and getting rid of cops. And he said, how many of you people have walked down Ocean Avenue at midnight?
Oh, yeah.
You don't
right.
know the problems there. You're making – these are people who are isolated from the real problems, who are coming up with theories for solving the problems, but they're not there. They're, in other words, you know, what do you call it? Every council meetings of – there were scripted council meetings from the woke people going after the council for a bunch of things. They are scripted, and they got criticized because they were all from Ward E. And then suddenly they started, they diversified. So you had somebody from Ward A, from all these, but they were reading from a prepared script. The last meeting, the first 10 or 15 people read exact words. The exact same things that the first person. So you're listening to an absolute scripted, and it's coming from people who have never walked down Ocean Avenue at midnight. In
exactly.
my case, it's River Street in Patterson.
Exactly.
You know, they don't know what the problems are.
Absolutely. And I think this transposing of thoughts and emotions and feelings and trying to have that affect policy, Al, I think is dangerous. And I think it's also, we're seeing the product of it when, again, I'm not trying to be racial here, but it's the same in New Jersey. It's the same white woke progressives that are sitting around being all virtuous, and they don't realize that normal everyday people encounter problems that they don't for whatever reason. And it's that disconnect, I think, that turns a lot of people off, like me, to the left, especially in New Jersey. Al, speaking of Governor Murphy, it's being reported today on various news outlets, starting with Insider NJ, as well as others, that the governor, and apparently sources in Trenton, are indicating that the governor is close to ordering new COVID-19 restrictions. due to the fact that it seems that according to the governor's office and the Department of Health, that coronavirus numbers are on the rise in the state. I know that you've been on this podcast earlier this year and also my other local podcast, and you have had serious issues with the governor in terms of what many would call draconian measures when it comes to battling COVID-19. It seems that now the winter months are coming, and my sources tell me that the governor might be revisiting another complete shutdown. How catastrophic is this going to be for us, Al?
Well, it's going to destroy the economy. In other words, you can't do a lot of these people, a lot of businesses, a lot of people who have started back to work. There's been investment to it's like there's the old concept of I can't remember the term, but when you shut down a factory and you reopen it and you get it all geared up, and then all of a sudden you shut it down. There's an expense to doing all that, and that's what why Mayor Fulop basically said he's not going to do the same kind of restrictions that Hoboken and Newark did, because a lot of these businesses are fragile. Well, if the governor does this again, he destroys the economy. And this time there will be a second blow, and a lot of the places that had managed to somehow survive now are heading into winter, especially restaurants who can't, if he shuts down everything, they're gone. I mean, several prominent Jersey City restaurants have announced closing. So the most recent is the South, one on Berg, I can't remember the name of it now. Been there
South
for
City
5 years. Really,
South
really
City.
Great
South.
On Newark Avenue.
South City Grill.
Well, not City Grill. No, this is Texas place. I can't remember the name of it. And the problem is that's going to happen a lot. You had the diner at Liberty State Park is gone. They closed.
Yeah.
These are not, you know, there was always a risk that that once you open the economy again, that the numbers would climb. The problem here, the difference between this time and back in April is one, they're massively testing, okay, non-symptomatic people. So the numbers are much higher for positives. That doesn't mean that they're going to go to hospital. The danger, of course, is the risk of spreading, okay? But the fact is the death numbers are down. The hospitalizations are down. What's up are the positive tests. And in some cases, you now can get the test kits online or even in a pharmacy. So you have all of these people who are testing and testing. And he's basing this not on the imminent threat that he had in March, but on this perceived threat that the testing is creating. And that's what's dangerous about his making decisions like that. I don't know what the medical profession, the health department is saying to him, but it does not seem reasonable because it's not the same condition now as what he faced in March.
Well, Al, I mean, speaking of numbers here, I mean, just some preliminary things here that I've came across. Apparently the governor in his daily COVID briefing stated that Bergen, Essex, and Passaic counties were clocking in on more than 200 daily positives. For example, earlier today, Camden, Hudson, and Monmouth, as well as Union County, had more than 100. Apparently, today's total was 2,104 positive cases, bringing the cumulative amount in New Jersey to 247,219. Apparently, there were 12 new reported COVID deaths. Which, Al, I'll be honest with you again. I don't want to get into conspiracy theories, and I don't want to get all bombastic here, but even that, I think a lot of people in New Jersey have become skeptical about what's recorded as a COVID death. I mean, people are hospitalized, obviously, and numbers are on the rise. The governor claims he's resistant to reversing reopening decisions because, you know, since he got a lot of backlash, canceled. For example, he canceled plans to reopen indoor dining completely in early July. If you remember, man, he roasted, and rightfully so. I mean, it's the summer months, and whether it's the Jersey Shore, whether it's South Jersey, Atlantic City, even up here in Hudson County. I mean, my goodness. I mean, there are a lot of restaurant owners that are like, wait a minute, what is going on here? And then he decides to reopen it at 25% capacity in early September. Well, guess what? The summer months came and went, and businesses came and went. And I think, as you just alluded to, New Jerseyans are terrified that, especially with these winter months, yeah, when it started in March, yeah, it was kind of, it was so cold, I'm not going to lie, but we knew that we had spring and summer coming. Guess what? We had a pretty mild winter at the start of this year, January and February. And if you remember last November, December, we're okay. It wasn't overwhelmingly cold, but guess what? It's the winter. And my God, if we shut this down completely again, I just think it could be like absolute economic Armageddon here, Al.
Well, it also, the fact is that some of those restaurants survived by having outdoor. Well, you know, they're not going to be able to do that. I mean, they can try. I mean, I've seen people put in heaters and stuff. But what is the difference between a tent with a heater in it and the inside of the restaurant? I mean,
yeah.
You know, if you're going to spread COVID, you're going to spread COVID. I mean,
yeah.
And, you know, but it's more than that. The number, look, it's not just, there's a great Barrington dissertation that describes what's going on, and it's a group of doctors, about 100 of them, who have signed on to this, that describe the problem here, which is that we're all getting paranoid over positives, and that the other numbers are relatively low, and in fact, they're in some cases very low. The recovery rate, if you do come down with it, is still 99%. Okay, who shuts down the economy for a disease that, you know, for a pandemic that is 99% of the people are recovering from? I mean, that's the logic here. It's this, we're in a panic, and as conspiratorial as I'd like to be that, you know, they're doing this, you know, for the election, we're beyond the election now. And so obviously some of these people have bought into their own paranoia. The fact is that if you have a massive recovery rate, you know, then why are you shutting down the economy? You impose restrictions. You enforce what's there. If social distancing works, okay, if masks work, if you can, sanitizer works, then why are you shutting things down? They're implying that what their safety precautions aren't working. And now, you know, Jersey City is now mailing masks to everybody in the city. I mean, what is, you know, if they work, then make them work. I mean, back in March, several mayors told me, the governor had told them they're shutting down the economy for 2 weeks. That's to get people used to these safety precautions. Well, it was a very long 2 weeks.
Yes.
And he's proposing the same thing again. Well, nobody's going to believe him, you know, no matter how short he says this is. And, you know, why are they not is it that people, they can't make normal precautions work? Because if you follow the precautions, in most cases, you're not going to get it.
Well, Al, the problem is, and you just said it beautifully, is the idea of people, I think, are going to be much more resistant this time. And for those during the spring and summer that showed resistance, I mean, listen, they got mainstream attention. As we all know, for example, my friend Ian Smith, who's the owner of the Attila's Gym in South Jersey, you know, he got national recognition for taking the governor. We saw some other business owners that were also fined by the attorney general. I mean, listen, you're absolutely right. If some of these measures can be taken and people can, again, the state doesn't have to shut down completely, then the government should explore that. But I don't know who he's trying to appease here. I don't know if he's just trying to, like, quell panic. You're inducing more panic among people because, and listen, let's be very honest, this has had such a detrimental effect on our schools. It's had a detrimental effect on our economy. Small businesses have suffered. I mean, in every which way possible, and I understand we can't be negligent and irresponsible. But by the same token, too, though, Al, I think the governor, I don't know who he's listening to in Trenton specifically, whether it's the Department of Health or his inner circle, but I would make the argument there has to be some people in his inner circle who are probably giving him bad advice.
Well, it has to be his health department because that's the, you know, it's the state health department that oversees COVID, okay, in every state. That's the whole misnomer of the Biden-Trump thing, okay?
Oh.
The president isn't in charge of it. It is, and even the governor really isn't. It's the there's a direct conduit between the the CDC and every department of health. They are constant contact. They're the people who are doing this. So if they're telling the governor something, it has to be coming out of that department. The question is where they're getting their data and who is in charge. I mean, the one in Pennsylvania is totally off the deep end. She is really just, you know, totally panicking. So are they panicking in the health department, in the state department of health? I don't know, but that's where it has to come from because he can't be getting advice from anybody in his cabinet. It has to be coming from the health officials for him to make these decisions.
You're right on that. And I think it's something to keep an eye on for sure, because as we know, the winter months are coming and it should be interesting to see exactly what decision the governor makes. Let's hope he doesn't make the one we're all fearing. Let's hope that common sense and rational thought maybe prevails here. A couple of days after Election Day, it's exhausting to say the very least of what's going on here in New Jersey. We saw that up in North Jersey, by and large, no surprises with House races up here in Hudson County where we live. Congressional District 7, I think Albie O'Cera is easily getting reelected. I think we saw a couple of other winners, no surprises, with Bill Pascrell. Even though, I'll be very honest, I was rooting for Billy Premp. I interviewed him on my Real Talk show. He's a really, really nice guy. I think he got his feet wet here. I don't think this will be the last you hear of someone like Billy Premp. I think he'll definitely take a stab in 2022 in that district because he made a lot of headway. He got a lot of recognition. I think he became a very loud voice for Republicans, especially people of color. Moving south a little bit, you know, Mikey Sherrill's win, no surprise there. As much as I like Tom King Jr. because of his dad, it just seemed like money and time was not on the side of Tom King Jr. with Malinowski being there. But down south, it seems like the Kennedy name doesn't have the capital it once did because it didn't get Amy Kennedy over the hump. It seems, to my knowledge, that Jeff Van Drew won that race. I think it's been called. Nice to see Chris Smith win. Andy Kim getting reelected was a surprise. I thought maybe David Richter could overtake him. Any thoughts on the House races and ones that you were surprised about or not surprised about?
Well, I thought the Republicans would do better than they did, but, you know, it's not a surprise in Jersey. I think the Republicans overall made some inroads into the whole national thing, so it scared the Democrats and Pelosi a little that they gained some seats. I think that we're setting ourselves up for the midterm in 2 years, where you're going to probably see if Trump is not president, you're going to see the GOP candidates do better, because I think the big without him being attacked, without them campaigning against Trump, a lot of these Democrats who won this time don't have a campaign. We're in an era where, you know, there's a lot of money pouring into the Democratic Party, partly because of the Biden-Trump thing. So a lot of that filters down to House candidates because they want to keep control of the House. So it wasn't a surprise that much. I just wished some more of the GOP had actually done well, especially South Jersey. I mean, the ones that you just mentioned, I figured would win. I'm very happy with Van Drew, partly because he made a point. that you can't cast somebody out for, we elect people because we trust their opinions and their judgments. And then the minute he used his judgment, the party turned on him. It's just really ridiculous. But, yeah, no big surprises for me.
I agree with you, Al. And it's interesting because I think the lack of wins in Central Jersey and maybe a little bit of South Jersey, I think it kind of puts the NJGOP in a precarious position. Now, going into next year, the governor has a very high approval rating. Again, I would argue it that it seems too high for me, but whatever. I mean, I don't know who the polling is, but we all know that polling is an exact science. We've learned it already two cycles in a row. But it seems like Governor Murphy is enjoying a lot of popularity within the party. He's locked up a lot of important endorsements from DiVincenzo in Essex County to, I think, every county chair to, the big mayors in the big cities, Ross Barak, the mayor in Patterson, I forgot his name, but he's also on board. Phillip seems to be on board. Elizabeth, Trenton. Seems like the governor's consolidating a lot of that support for next year. And I'll tell you something, I think, and I'm looking forward to having him on the show, I think Republican Chairman Doug Steinhardt has a lot to answer for here in New Jersey. There are a lot of upset Republicans in the state. I think a lot of registered Republicans are saying, hey, listen, you didn't do a good enough job in trying to get some of these House races more competitive. You didn't raise enough money. And at the end of the day, whether it's right or wrong, it falls on the chairman of a state party to kind of mobilize people and to get races won. That doesn't seem to be the case. And this is a guy who people are saying, hey, he might challenge for the Republican nomination. I think Doug Steinhardt's in a little bit of trouble here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is New Jersey, and the Democrats have a lot of control here. I mean, the governor at this point is a better politician than he is a governor. And so he knows how to play the political game. And so the Democrats do. The problem with the GOP is they got shattered for two cycles in a row, maybe three, where they just could not recover. And it's hard in this state. I mean, there's not the kind of GOP that we saw with the Cahill days or even the Whitman days. There's not – many of the people just aren't there. Many of them were older senior citizens who have either retired or died. Many people have moved out. It's not the old GOP. And also the spread – the same problem that Texas has with all of the Californians moving into Texas is a lot of the traditional Republican areas are no longer Republican because people have moved there from other parts that are more liberal. So it's sort of really difficult for him. I mean, he is – I feel sorry for him.
Al, I'm sorry to catch up. Isn't it funny where you're seeing – liberals? It's mind-boggling to me. You're seeing liberals move from states where they have seen that liberal policies are bankrupting the state, and they're moving to other states and trying to affect influence there. It's almost mind-boggling to me. It's like a New Jersey liberal moving out of New Jersey. Oh, it's too expensive here. Yeah, let me move to Texas and then try to mobilize liberals and Democrats, and let's make Texas more liberal. Like, it's almost the poster children of being tone deaf. Like, you're being so stupid, like really cutting your nose to spite your face. And I don't understand how people don't see through this, Al. Sorry.
Well, they don't. I mean, it's almost like a religion at this point. You believe it even though it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't. The kind of liberal policies in California have literally destroyed the state. I mean, my favorite is the fact that they went to huge green technology for their power and now have to brown out sections of the state because they don't have enough power. Well,
yeah.
Duh. duh. I mean, that's the logic. But they don't see anything inconsistent in that. And that's a problem. I mean, you know, but it's the GOP isn't countering it in any way. I don't see how, you know, you resist that. Can you refuse people to come into your state? I mean, it's like, you know, and then so what happens is your party gets watered down. And that's what's happening. It's sort of like the GOP in Jersey is a very watered-down existence, partly because of moving around population. And I don't know how you counter that, but that's where the leadership comes in. Somebody there needs to maybe educate a lot of these people who are moving in the neighborhood and saying, well, you didn't like it where you were, so why are you coming here with that? I guess that's, you know, education is part of it.
Al, it's mind-boggling to me. And, again, when we're seeing what's going on here in New Jersey, and, again, I understand that, listen, whether it's Doug Steinhardt or his predecessors, or I understand being a Republican in New Jersey is really difficult. It's not downright impossible, okay? It's not downright impossible. So I understand it puts him in a precarious position, but it just seems that, again, going into next year, listen, I like Jack Cittarelli. I know him personally. Nice man. Gentleman has come on this podcast multiple times. I like him. I just don't know if that's the type of character that can overtake Murphy. Now, listen, I just had this conversation today over lunch with somebody, and, again, notwithstanding what we know about him after 8 years in office, but 2009 Chris Christie, okay, that personality, that persona, that presence, there's nobody in the Republican Party right now in New Jersey that exemplifies that. Again, I'm not saying 2016 Chris Christie. I'm talking about summer 2009 Chris Christie. That's why it was manageable to be a guy like – now, listen, Phil Murphy isn't John Corzine. John Corzine was a lame duck governor. I thought it was only his first term, but he was not governing well. He was becoming immensely unpopular. And remember, this is literally the year after Barack Obama got elected. And if you remember, Barack Obama came to New Jersey three times to campaign for John Corzine, and he did nothing to help him, okay? And
didn't help Healey either.
Exactly. And no offense, the problem is there isn't a Republican personality out there, I think, that can maybe take it to Murphy. The only guy, and again, I'm not trying to take sides here, but he's a guy who I've interviewed multiple times. He's a little green politically. But I'll tell you right now, Al, Michael Testa, state senator south in LD1, that's a guy who I think has as good a chance as any Republican to maybe win that nomination if he jumps in there, because it's going to take a type of personality to take on Murphy.
Well, also, one of the GOP needs to reach out to moderate Democrats. And they have to understand it and make them it clear that the Murphy represents the extreme left of the party. With all the endorsements, with all the people endorsing him, people endorse him because Murphy is the governor, and he's a very powerful political figure. But if they get an alternative that says, hey, Murphy doesn't represent you, and the voters get the idea that, you know, taxpayers in Central Jersey, the Amboys or stuff, that they are not, that the governor is giving away the store and they're paying for it. That's how the Republicans need to bridge that gap. And I don't know much about him. I've seen his name because I've spent some time in Cape May. I think that, you know, if you can get somebody who can communicate to the working people, regardless of what party they're in, then you have a chance of beating Murphy.
I agree. I just don't know if this is the cycle where a Republican can come out with that sort of strong personality to take on Murphy. But then it trickles down, Al. Where here in New Jersey, again, it's becoming more expensive. It's suffocating us with taxes. As a homeowner myself, I've seen that, you know, listen, my state senator and mayor tries to keep it affordable here, but that's not the case in other parts of New Jersey. And I think this is where it's ripe for a lot of people to say, you know what? Every assembly seat's up for grabs next year. Every state senate seat's up for grabs. There are a lot of lifers in Trenton that are just sitting there. They're not doing anything for us. They keep, you know, saying yes like a bunch of seals in a circus waiting for fish on, yeah, tax, spend. I would argue, Al, 2021 is perhaps the best year for some people to come in here and sneak up on some of these incumbents.
Well, here's the issue. If the governor shuts down the economy again, then the conditions become even more ripe because there'll be a lot of angry people out there. And that's the kind of election that upsets incumbents on every level. I mean, you know, the economy is everything. I mean, that's the reason why Trump is having problems now. Less part of it's COVID, but most of it is the economy. People are scared. Well, if the governor decides that he's going to abandon the economy, then that sets up a lot of trickle down to the assembly and the state senate people, because they're going to be the people who have to answer the question, because local have much more contact with them than they ever will with the governor.
No, that's right. That's right. And I think, listen, if this second shutdown, which seems imminent, does indeed happen, I think it's going to I think it's going to make people reassess exactly. Hey, what am I doing here next year in New Jersey? Why should I reelect this assemblywoman or man or state senator who is just sort of sitting on their hands and saying, yes, governor, how high do you want me to jump, governor? And I think, again, it creates a climate where incumbents could be vulnerable, especially if that shutdown, again, goes into the winter, goes into the spring, and guess what? What's Trenton going to do? Is Trenton going to just mail out checks to everybody? Because they're going to have to at some point if people aren't working.
But where do they get the money?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, it depends on president, but what do you call it? If Biden gets elected, he's increasing taxes, and he's not going to have the money to give to states, even though, you know, there's the war between Trump and New Jersey now over the handling of stuff. The money just isn't there. How many more CARES Acts can you pass? I mean, they're going to get one more out of this Congress, I think, before it dissipates. But there's not a lot of cash. I mean, so I don't know how you rescue the state once you run out of federal money.
No, absolutely. And speaking of federal money, Al, listen, who knows? I don't want to think it's 20 years ago. I feel like I'm reliving Bush v. Gore again. I don't know. I mean, there are different dynamics here clearly than 20 years ago, but it seems like we're not going to get any answers for a few days, if not a few weeks. And with COVID, with people having anxiety the way we are because of this election, I don't know, Al. Again, I don't like to be a conspiracy theorist whatsoever, but it just seems, you know, I went to sleep Tuesday night kind of feeling good because of the electoral map, and then I wake up looking at completely different numbers in Michigan and Wisconsin, seeing a state like Arizona being called, you know, when maybe it shouldn't have been. I'm seeing, you know, Georgia and North Carolina clearly had 94-95% precincts in. Those states weren't being called. It was sort of reminding me of, like, people think I'm being hyperbolic when I go crazy about the liberal media and how influential they're trying to be in trying to push over a candidate. I don't know, Al. It just seems like a pollsters got it wrong again. So I would not be trusting pollsters whatsoever anymore to poll even what toilet paper should buy. And as far as I'm concerned, Al, this is just, it's getting to a point where I'm sorry, this is being ridiculous. And I don't know why this is happening. What are your thoughts when you went to sleep Tuesday night?
Well,
and then
same
today
thing.
On Thursday, what are your thoughts?
Same thing. The fact is that something happened when they shut down the counting and then restarted it. And there's a lot of apocrypha, but the fundamental problem here is that the three states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and I can't remember the other one, I think it's Michigan, violated the federal constitution in setting up the way they did the account, the voting system. That's where they're vulnerable, okay? Whether you want to be conspiracy about, you know, with them not allowing Republicans to look at the count, that all of that is beside the point. The fact is the legal eagles at this point, this is probably going to go to the Supreme Court for those three states because they clearly violated the law when they allowed the governor and in one case a panel appointed by the governor to modify the voting, the way people are voting. And the Constitution flat out says that this has to be a legislative solution. You can't make the change through the governor or anybody associated with them. They did this, and so they're now very vulnerable. Whether there's funny business, probably is, because we're talking about Democratic states who are not allowing GOP people to review what they're doing. So there's a lot of suspicion there. But the legal standard is they have to justify how they did it, and they're not. They're apparently some of the cases they've thrown out their own signature laws. In other words, these are things that were set in place by the state legislatures, and by according to the Constitution, they're the people who are responsible, not the governor. So if the governor makes a change in that, it's violating federal Constitution. And that's the legal problem for those three states. Jersey actually did it right, which is really – and there's a good, really, really good analysis on Insider NJ by Lou Manzo. Put it up today.
Yep. Yeah,
he had sent me this early. I had seen it, and we had talked about it. He breaks down the analysis very good. And the fact is that's where you're going to see – the most pressure from the administration. The stuff with Arizona is apparently more votes were cast, about 700,000 more were cast that day, and they were not yet counted. So ABC had to withdraw. They actually took back their saying that it went to Biden. I don't know if it'll go to Biden anyway. Fox is a big disappointment. They just fell into line. But then, you know, they had been sort of leaning that way for a while.
Absolutely.
But ultimately, Nevada is frozen at this point. I think they stopped it because the figures haven't changed in 30 hours or something.
Arizona's
at question, but the big three, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, are going to probably will go to the Supreme Court.
Well, Al, what's weird is that North Carolina and Georgia seem to be fine, and it seems like based on the margin of victory and based on the amount of precincts up, like those should have been called. I'm really, really annoyed with Georgia. And I'm like, wait a minute, what is taking so long when you're looking at 96? I'm sorry, I'm looking at the website right now. Georgia has 98.3% in. And the president, I mean, has a slight lead. You have to call that. I'm sorry, you have to call that.
I know. They're playing games. And at this point, we're not going to see this until – I mean, what do you call it? I think the president has four lawsuits now. He's filed four different suits. I think we're not going to see anything. A lot of stuff is going to stay frozen until those suits get resolved.
Yeah, and who knows? This might go until December. If you remember 20 years ago, and remember, this is pre-social media. This is kind of not at the infancy of the internet, but, you know, we have internet, you know, a few years already. And it was already cable news or 24 hours a day. But guess what? Now it's on steroids. Now we have social media. Now we have – oh, God.
Well, I've shut down on Twitter. I just don't follow that right now. I had been right up until the election. And then a couple of days before the election, I said, I'm driving myself crazy. So I'm just going to shut that off. I'm reading news sites, but I'm not going to follow the back and forth on Twitter because it was drive. It was just all you do is get really angry, and then you spend all your time like hyperventilating. It's better to just follow the trail of what's actually happening news wise, and at the end of the day, my sources are, really deeply divided on whether Trump can pull this off. Some believe.
Same here, Al.
Yeah.
Same here.
So
it's very divided. And also, too, when you look at some of these states, you look at that third party, Joe Jurgensen, the Libertarian, look at Arizona, 40,000 votes she took up. At Georgia, 60,000 votes. You look at North Carolina, 47,000 votes. You're looking at Michigan, 60,000. I mean, it's unbelievable to me how. Listen, I know people want those third parties and people want more than the two-party system, but this is where those third parties can be spoilers, and it seems like that's what's happened to the incumbent here. It seems
like
the president, because of George Jurgensen. Yeah. Al,
interesting. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Go on.
No, what do you call it? I agree. And, there's some suspicion that they're – was Democratic influence in encouraging, paving the way for her to get on the ballots where they damaged Kanye West. So it's, obviously they wanted her on the ballot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And clearly in a lot of these states, 30,000 here, 40,000 here. I mean, when the margin is like less than, in some states, 30, I mean, it makes a difference. I mean, it's certainly... Al, we'll have you on next month again just to see if any updates on this race. I mean, hopefully we'll have some clarity.
It's still not resolved.
Yeah, true. I mean, listen, I'd like to think that before Christmas we'll get something, but who knows. Al, before I let you go, I know obviously you do a great job with Tap Into. Certainly it is growing exponentially in New Jersey. There's so many municipalities. I know you're pretty much concentrated in Bayonne.
I'm covering Jersey City too.
Okay,
he's
moving
expanded.
Forward. So moving forward into the rest of 2020, anything big you're working on? Anything we should keep an eye out for regarding Tap Into and some of the things you're working on?
Well, at this point, we're now geared up for the Jersey City election. I mean, even though it's not till November, you're now seeing people starting to position themselves. And one of the interesting developments, and you might want to ask her when she's on your show again, is where Amy is. Because she's been touring around with Menendez Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And so there seems to be some interesting development that there could be a coalition of Menendez Jr., Amy DeGeese, and Lavaro and Solomon making up, and then Ambrosia from Ward D making up a ticket that would be funded, and with Amy on there, it would be incredibly powerful. And that would be for next year's mayoral. So,
I have her on coming up again in my monthly appearance with her on my podcast. She'll be on later this month before Thanksgiving break. Obviously, you raise a great point about Rob Menendez Jr. I talked about it last night on my local podcast. We're talking the Hudson on Wednesday nights that I do with Block Talk Radio. And it seemed that someone like Bruce Alston, who, has good sources, and he's another respected member in the community when it comes to his website. It's like Mayor A did well yesterday in Jersey City. Tuesday with Yusuf Saleh winning the special election. So now he has a sixth incumbent on his ticket slate with the council. So that's obviously going to make him stronger. And I think also, too, we're seeing that, and I talked about this with her before, and I kind of posed this scenario. It would seem smart for Mayor Fulop to try to make peace with Bob Sr. Now, I'm not saying that, try to convince Robert Jr. to run for the Ward E Council seat to get rid of Solomon, because we all know that Mayor Fulop doesn't like James Solomon. But it doesn't seem like that's going to be the play. I think there's still a lot of bad blood there between Bob Menendez and Stephen Fulop. I mean, again, you talk to their camps, Al, and one, listen, I may not have as great sources as you do, but my sources will tell me that, listen, you ask Bob Menendez, he's convinced that in 2017, you know, Stephen Fulop was very adamant behind the scenes trying to wiggle his way in there to see if, oh, if, you know, Bob had to step down, he wanted to maneuver something to get in there, and Bob's camp is convinced. If you talk to Stephen Fulop's people, even Stephen Fulop himself, he denies it flatly. You know what? Sometimes the truth is in the middle. Maybe somewhere in the middle there's a truth about what really, really happened there. But when it comes to Senator Menendez, it doesn't matter. He is you can tell he's still angry. There's still some animosity. I mean, Stephen Fulop repaired his relationship a little bit with Tom DeGise, the county executive in Hudson, but I don't think it's sufficient to where, you know, I don't think Amy DeGise, and I'll ask her again because she hasn't made a decision, but I don't think Amy would want to. I'll quote Bruce Alston yesterday. Amy DeGise doesn't need the council, but the council could definitely need Amy DeGise.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, here's the problem. And the bad blood between Menendez and Fulop goes back a lot further. Okay, understand that there was a war between Menendez and Glenn Cunningham back in 2001, 2002, when, you know, when over the county executive and the county jobs. And who was on the Cunningham side was Fulop. Fulop, Cunningham ran Fulop against Menendez for Congress. And that began a long feud. Uh-huh. I think that, you know, Menendez never forgives. He doesn't forget either.
Well, he's Cuban. I mean, I'm Cuban, so I understand.
Well,
I'm Cuban.
Don't want to go there.
No, listen, I can say it. I'm Cuban. My mom is Cuban. Right. I have Cuban roots. Listen, once you cross us, man, you'll have to walk on water for us to ever even talk to you again. So we hold grudges. I'll be the first one to admit it, man.
Well, and I think that everything since then has made it worse. And I think that, you know, Fulop trying to unseat DeGise, was one of the things that got Menendez even more angry, because it seemed like a pattern of behavior. Yeah. And, you know, the fact is, during the time when Menendez was on trial, all of the people I talked to in Fulop's camp, and not Fulop never told me himself, but all of his people were convinced that he was going to go for state senate, for the U.S. Senate, and take Menendez. Mm-hmm. So it was out there in his camp. So it wasn't just in Menendez's imagination. This was something being actively talked about, if not by Fulop himself, then by people very close to Fulop. And so, you know, it's not – so these are things that, you know – and I've made Bob mad a few times. In fact, there's people that are still mad at me for things I've written, but not on that level. And I've never been consistently repeating that mistake. And I think Fulop's decisions over time – have just repeated that. They've kept tearing open the same wound. And so I don't think that's ever going to be forgiven. And
you're right about that.
Go ahead.
You're right. No, you're right about that. I think that it's something that it's not even a work in progress. I just feel that it is something that could maybe prompt a mayoral run by Robert Jr. Now, again, Al, your sources are better than mine, and I definitely, again, going into 2021, I want to be able to do more episodes with you to cover this, because I definitely want to be able to get this out there. But it just seems that, you know, there are some, you know, in Hudson County that would say, well, Robert Jr. hasn't run for anything. He needs to sink his teeth in somewhere. He needs to, you know, break some eggs first, maybe running for A, B, or C, whatever, as opposed to just, hey, you know, I'm going to go on my name and run for mayor. Some people think that's very ballsy. Some people think, okay, well, if you're going to swing for the fence, you might as well swing if you're going to get into the game. I think there are some people – I think this is what's going to make Hudson County divided, because I'll be honest with you, right now it seems like the HCDO – isn't completely backing Phillip. I think they've been quiet about it. It's still early. Yep. I mean, obviously it's 2020, but I think that even, listen, if you had to, I like to gamble. I bet on football games all the time online. If you had to ask me as a gambling man, I would put some money and say Amy will not run for a council seat. I think Amy is very content being a county chair. She's a very good county chair compared to others in the state. The governor likes her. She's on the ground all the time. She's, you know, she's a power player in the party. I don't think she needs to run for city council to keep that momentum in her political capital. She already has it. So with that in mind, you know, does that force the HCDO to have to take a side? Because if Robert Jr. does run and Menendez is going to fundraise for his son and he's going to get the big names to support his son, I don't think the HCDO is just going to say, well, no, we're going to go with incumbent. I'm sorry, Al. I don't think that's going to happen. I think I can visibly see the HCDO saying, you know what? We're going to go with Robert Jr. That's my guess. Well, I won't put money on it, but that's my guess.
Well, there's also other factors, okay? There's O'Day would love to become county executive. And so that, you know, there would be a kind of fear of him, too, because he's so close to Phillip that that's another alienating factor. I mean, there are people – Phillip doesn't have the entire county, I mean, honestly. From what I gather, Sacco doesn't particularly want O'Day anywhere near the county executive. Well, Phillip is there and he has a choice, he would put, O'Day in that position. So we're back to that conspiracy of trying to get rid of DeGees. I think DeGees is not going to run again, but we'll find out. I mean, he may be forced to also just to ward off this. But that divides the county again because there's
exactly.
All of these – Mm-hmm. All of this is about jobs on the county. It was back when Cunningham was trying to get the county, and it was when Phillip tried to get rid of DeGees, and now it will be about that again. And so, especially if the economy starts tanking, as it appears to be, and municipal jobs become dried up, they're going to be mm-hmm. need to find jobs for people. So we'll see. Stay tuned.
Oh, Al, absolutely, and I think it's something definitely to keep an eye on for, because as we know that conflict and that heat that we saw in the spring of 2018, it could resurface in 2021 again, because
absolutely.
As we said,
well,
you know, if we start seeing these divisions and we start having to force people to take sides here, I don't know about you, I mean, other than his incumbents and his ticket. A lot of the big names in the party countywide might, again, we don't listen for all we know, Robert Jr. might not run again. You know, I've talked to him, not about it per se. I mean, at some point, I'm sure it'll come up in conversation, but it seems like his visibility is showing signs of running, but we can't say that for sure. So I think it's something to keep an eye on, but if he does announce his run for 2021, it's going to, I would argue, it's going to make people take sides. And guess what? Once they take sides, that's it. It's over. You know, once you take a side, you're on that side. And whoever the loser is, guess what? To the victor go the spoils. We saw that
absolutely.
in the county chair race. You know, think about what happened to Felix Roque in West New York when he was mayor, right? He decided to go with Phillip in that entourage. And look what happened to him. He got forced
yep.
out and voted out. Now, Robbie Bala in Hoboken survived the scourge because he was with Stack and Phillip. He survived somehow, but I don't think he'll survive next year. I think that's going to come back to bite him, and we'll talk about that definitely in future episodes. But, Al, before I let you go,
sure.
Thank you so much for coming on. You're always a pleasure to have on this program. You know, you're such a wealth of information, and certainly I appreciate you wanting to come on here with Insider NJ as well as my local podcast. So I'll definitely – be in touch with you off air, and we'll keep in touch, man, because I love having you on the show, and you're a great contributor, Al. Thanks again.
Sure. Thank you. I got to go because my boss is looking for me.
Yes,
I'll talk
Al,
to you later.
Thing, Al. I'll talk to you later, Al. Take care.
Stay up, bye-bye.
All right, folks. Great episode today here with Tap Into columnist Al Sullivan, and certainly, like I said, he's one of those guys that you know, has such a wealth of information, and without a question,
hello,
you know, he's great to have on the program all the time. So definitely a guy that is so entrenched in the county, knows the county, and again is a wealth of information. So again, a great episode there today with Al Sullivan, again, distinguished columnist from Cap Into, covering Bayonne and Jersey. Well, folks, that's our show for this week here. Again, if you missed any part of the broadcast, don't worry. You can listen to the episode in its entirety and all the other ones by going to www.insidernj.com/podcasts. And certainly you will have all the episodes there free of charge. You can listen to them and download them anywhere, anytime, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. If you have any suggestions for a topic or guest coming up, do me a favor, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj, as well as my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also, folks, hit me up on Twitter. And don't forget, for all you Facebook subscribers, please like Politically Direct also on Facebook. Over 1,000 likes already on the page. So, hey, I must be doing something right if all of you are liking the page and keep contributing. So I appreciate that. And don't forget to check out Insider NJ, folks, when you go to their website, www.insidernj.com. And it's certainly the best coverage of the political scene in the state of New Jersey. It starts off with our great columnists. I don't always agree with them. Some of them are sometimes delusional. But, hey, we find a way to get along and tolerate each other. And that's a great thing from the editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, who sometimes annoys me. But I know I annoy him. So it kind of, you know, it cancels each other out. You know what I'm saying? As well as Al, you know, Jay Lasseter, Fred Snowflack, even Alan Steinberg, who sometimes drives me crazy with some of his just outlandish columns. But they're all great talent, folks. I'm proud to be part of the Insider NJ family as we continue to bring you Politically Direct here every week on insidernj.com/podcast. So again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. And don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Well, folks, again, that's our show for this week. Certainly look forward to having you on here next week live here. And we again appreciate you listening to the podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. Again, let's hope we can survive the week here with this election turmoil. And we'll see if the votes ever get counted sometime this week, if not by the end of the month. All right, we'll see you, folks. In the meantime, stay safe. I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio, folks. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.